Welcome and thank you for joining us here once again at the Box Seat Podcast. I'm Josh Eddy.
And I'm Caden Condor.
And we're your guide to anything and everything college basketball related. Today is Friday, January 10th, and we'll be talking Washington, we'll be talking Maryland, Ohio State, pretty much everything that happened in the last 3 or 4 days in college basketball. We're here to break everything down for you, so thanks for joining us again.
And it's been a pretty stable week in college basketball so far, Josh. The teams at the top of the rankings have been able to relax a little bit more. The top 10 has actually gone 10-0 this week, while other teams are rapidly falling out of the rankings. And we're starting to get a bit of a more clear picture of which teams are for real and which teams are, you know, kind of started out hot and falling. We're going to start out today with the Washington-Stanford game. Just went on last night. The Huskies took a pretty tough loss that ended up losing to Stanford 61-55. Stanford's a good team. They're 13-2 now, undefeated in the Pac-12. What were your initial thoughts after watching that game?
Well, Stanford, undefeated in the Pac-12, they're 2-0. They're the only undefeated team. They're the only team that's going to be 2-0 in the Pac-12. Everyone else has at least one loss already. Arizona, Oregon, Colorado, Washington has two losses. No one saw this coming going into the season, so shout out to them. Shout out to Jared Haas. They have a pretty good program going. But yeah, on Washington's side, you were up 12 points with about, I think, 11 or so minutes to go, 11 yep. minutes and some change, and then it just kind of all started falling apart, and it wasn't really until the very end when Stanford just kept raining in threes, and it kind of felt like that UCLA game a little bit,
yep.
where Washington just couldn't really put their foot on the throats and come out with the win.
Mm-hmm. And the biggest frustration for me as a fan watching that game was just the complete failure to execute their plays down the stretch when it really mattered at the end of the game. We didn't score the last three or so minutes of the game, yeah. which is pretty unacceptable when you think of how much talent Washington has offensively. You know, Jaden McDaniels, Isaiah Stewart, Nas Carter, all those guys can fill it up. And the fact that we really didn't even put any good shots up. We had Elijah Hardy pulling up from three. We had Hamir Wright driving to the basket.
Two things you don't want if you're a Washington fan.
Exactly. And we were calling timeouts, and I would assume that the coaching staff, Mike Hopkins and Conroy and those guys, would be drawing up plays to get open shots in the break, and I'm not really sure what was happening, because we would come out of the timeout, inbounds the ball, and then, you know, shoot a three from 35 feet out. And that doesn't seem like what Hopkins or the coaching staff would want, so I'm confused as to why that happened down the stretch.
Yeah, a big reason for Washington's a slow offense in this game came from Isaiah Stewart. Mainly, I'll give more credit to Stanford in this than Stewart. Stewart's been awesome throughout the whole season. But Stanford, especially Oscar De Silva, was really good at defending those entry passes and really didn't give Stewart much of a chance at all to even get the ball. Stewart only put up 8 shots in this game. He only scored 4 points, which is the lowest mark of the season by far. The next lowest he had was 12 points, and that was, I think, against Eastern Washington, and he only played like 20 minutes in that game.
Mm-hmm. And although Isaiah Stewart was shut down, we still had a lead at the half. Mm-hmm. So our role players and our other guys were still able to fill that support role without Stewart. So I don't think that was as much of an issue as it was just execution, failure to execute, because we showed in the first half that when Stewart gets double teamed, we're able to break it. He's able to pass out of the double team and find the open shooter. But when he started getting double teamed in the second half at the end of the game, because Stanford, they did stick to the, you know, they did stick to their game plan. They must have made some second half adjustments. But yeah, like I said, it just really worried me that we weren't able to adjust to that Stewart double team issue, because we did have the solution in the first half, but Stanford made some small changes and we weren't really able to figure it out after that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, McDaniels kind of had it going in the first.
He did.
In the first half and even some of the second half. And Nas Carter was doing some Nas Carter things mm-hmm. down the stretch. It seems like with Carter, it seems like he doesn't really do much. I don't have the stats in front of me, but I think his second half scoring has got to be way higher. It seems like he always kind of hits those threes, gets those breakaway dunks mm-hmm. when you really need it. And it just wasn't enough. And we'll talk about a reason why it wasn't enough is because Huskies are now missing their starting point guard for probably the rest of the season.
Yep, Quad A Green just ruled academically ineligible. Didn't get good enough grades fall quarter. Not going to be able to play until the middle of end of March. I think the winter quarter ends March 20th.
Yep.
So he's unavailable until then. So if the Huskies do end up making a deep run in the NCAA tournament, he will be eligible to play then, but only then. So we're going to have to figure out the point guard position until he comes back, possibly.
Yeah. So just to give you guys a little more insight, we're as far as the timeline of Quad A Green, we are UW students. We are kind of doing boots on the ground journalism here. We know what the schedule's like here. So basically what it is this whole quarter. So the last quarter, Quad A became, he was ineligible because he did not have his grades up in the fall quarter.
And UW is on the quarter system, by the way. So we have a fall quarter, a winter quarter, and a spring quarter.
Yeah. So the winter quarter just started this past week. And this was our first week coming back from break, whatever. So that's why he was able to play during winter break. But once this quarter started, he's no longer allowed to play for this whole quarter because he's ineligible. And basically what that looks like is he's not going to be able to play until after, I think, finals week of this quarter, which will be, like you said, March 20th. And the way that lines up with the college basketball season is that is going to be the first week of March Madness. So even if the Huskies do squeak into the tournament, which we'll get into that, it's looking maybe a little more improbable than we had thought coming into the season, but even if they do make it in, they would likely have to win the first two games and get into the Sweet 16 before Quad A could play again. I'm not totally sure how it aligns, but it's going to be really close to that first weekend of March Madness.
Yep, and it is a disappointing situation. I'm sure Quad A is disappointed. I'm sure the coaching staff and his teammates are disappointed. I have no doubt that he'll come back strong next year. Or whenever he comes back to play, he's going to use this hopefully as a chip on his shoulder, and he'll only be better because of this. But UW is now facing a situation where they have to figure out where they stand. We really don't have that starting point guard anymore. So now we have Elijah Hardy. He was the backup to Quad A. And we also have Marcus Sahonis, who we were planning on redshirting at the beginning of the season. But now he might be forced into action. Depending on how hard he plays,
he didn't play yesterday, right?
He did not play yesterday, so we still have that red shirt available. I think he's played in one, maybe two games this year.
Yeah, I've seen him on the court a little bit.
Yeah, so we still have that red shirt option available. Would have been nice, but he might be forced into action. Elijah Hardy, I think, will be the difference maker on this team, because this team does need a floor general. We need somebody to distribute to our scorers. How do you think Hardy looked last night, and how do you think he's looked at the beginning of the season here?
So Hardy's a guy that I've been high on defensively. I think he's really good on the ball. And I think actually the defense might be a little better with him in the starting lineup as opposed to Quad A. Quad A is a smaller guy. He's got a shorter wingspan. And especially if you're running the 2-3 zone, you want guys with long wingspans at the top of the key. And Hardy's going to be a guy that's better defensively, especially at the top of that 2-3 zone. And I think he's going to be better pressuring the ball than Quad A was. So I think that might be even a little bit of a step up. The offense, though, is where the questions come into play. Yep. And it doesn't seem like he didn't really do all that much yet last night. But he also didn't do too much, which I think was a good sign. And he's still kind of getting his feet wet. He never really played meaningful minutes last year. He was kind of in that, the bring in the all the walk-ons and then Hardy also at the end of the game. And he didn't play a lot of meaningful minutes. He's been getting in the rotation this year more so, though. We got to see. I don't think he's going to be a guy that does a lot offensively. I think he's just going to be there, take advantage of when he can get to the hoop and shoot open shots when it swings to him. But he's going to be more working on getting the other guys involved, like getting Stewart and McDaniels the ball.
And just to remind you guys, Elijah Hardy is no slouch of a player. He was a four, maybe five-star recruit coming out of high school.
Not five-star.
Four-star, maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah. Similar body type to Brandon Jennings. He was actually a very good shooter in high school, really good percentage-wise. Obviously, college is a much different pace of play. It's a much different game, but this is a guy that I think, if he can figure it out, give him a couple games at least to figure out, you know, where he stands in the offense, and he can kind of let the game come to him a little bit more rather than forcing it. I think he could really develop into, you know, a much better player than we're seeing on the court right now. You know, the college game just takes time. He really didn't play much at all last year. He basically just played the walk-on minutes.
Yeah.
And now that he's the starting point guard, he's going to be playing a lot more. So hopefully he can adjust. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, he was having trouble getting those entry passes into Stewart, which was why he had a tougher game. And also credit to Stanford's defense on that. They played great on the interior. Another guy who's been blossoming the last couple of games has been Nate Roberts. He's a redshirt freshman. He's a big boy for sure. He's kind of that the backup to Stewart, but he can kind of play them together also. And he's that small ball five, maybe the four with Stewart. And he's been really good against USC, and he was really good, especially in that first half against Stanford.
Yeah, I think him and Stewart could really develop into, you know, a really good front court for us. You know, Roberts is a guy who didn't play much last year, obviously. Him and Hamir Wright kind of exchange minutes at the four position. Hamir Wright is more of a stretch four. Nate Roberts is more of a guy that will stay in the paint, stay inside. But he's looked really good. Lefty, pretty good stroke, can finish down low, can get rebounds for us. Definitely been a good surprise for us.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say this with a guy like Stewart on our team, but he might be the best rebounder on the UW roster. He really goes up and gets them. He comes down strong, but he kind of has trouble doing stuff after that. There was a lot of times I saw yesterday where he would come down with a rebound, sometimes around two or three Stanford players, and then try and go back up, and then it would get slapped away.
Mm-hmm.
Or he wouldn't be able to convert the layup, or he wouldn't quite get it out in time. Just stuff like that, which, I mean, he's really hasn't played a lot of minutes, so give him time. But if he can figure that out, he's a really big guy. He's got really broad shoulders. He's going to be a problem in the paint right next to Stewart. So that's definitely a good sign if you're a Washington Husky fan.
I agree. And just one last reminder for you guys about just what we're missing with Quad A Green out. You know, 46% free throw shooter, or three-point shooter.
That'd be bad.
Much better from the free throw line. I think he's around 80%. One of our best shooters, the guy that you can keep in at the end of the game. So it's gonna be tough having him out. But where do you think this team stands heading into March? How do you think their chances are? Do they need to, you know, go on a big run here and win a couple games in a row?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I mean, they got Cal coming up tomorrow. That's an absolute must win. Now, the Huskies have lost three of their last four. Houston is a good team. Probably bubble. Probably be a tournament team. UCLA is not a good team. They're not gonna be in the tournament. Stanford will probably make the tournament or be a bubble team. They're around there. So two of those were on the road. The Houston game was a neutral site. But that's now three losses. And without the Baylor win, this UW resume is pretty weak. And that Baylor win's really keeping them up. And the margin for error is really small for this UW team. They're not going to have to run the table, but I think if you lose three more games throughout Pac-12 play, you might be on the outside looking in. And we're really early in Pac-12 play.
And, you know, a Stanford away game, that's a pretty tough game to win.
Yeah.
You know, Stanford is not a bad basketball team. And we were looking really good holding that 13-point lead throughout basically the whole game. But hopefully once we come back home, we can get a couple wins under our belt. Obviously the Cal game is going to be a must win for us. And we'll see where we go from there. Look, making the tournament this year is going to be much tougher than we thought. You know, already three conference losses. Is that
two,
right?
Two conference losses.
Two conference losses.
Out of three. But yeah, out of three games, yeah. But I think, I know Arizona's at home and Arizona State, which are Arizona's one of the better teams, and we'll get into their game against Oregon a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Oregon, we have one at home and one on the road. So
we will have many more opportunities. Pac-12 is a much improved conference this year, so we will have chances to improve our resume. Playing the likes of, you know,
Arizona, Oregon,
Arizona State, all those guys.
Yeah. All right. Enough of the Huskies. So let's get on to, we had pretty much four pretty solid ranked matchups this week. And the first one, this was going back Tuesday now, was a number 11 Ohio State going to number 12 Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
Maryland won this game 67-55. They're kind of in control most of the game over Ohio State. What did you see out of this one?
I just saw a classic Big 10 matchup here. Very gritty game. Neither team played extremely well. Neither team shot the ball extremely well. But Maryland did prove something to me on that game because Ohio State is a very solid team defensively, and they were able to put up 67 points on a night where they didn't really play their best basketball either. So they were really impressive to me. Credit to them. They also played solid defense. They didn't beat themselves. They didn't really turn the ball over. So Maryland really proved something to me on Wednesday.
Yeah. Now, Maryland, I mean, they're at home. I don't think they've won a true road game yet this year, so that's something to monitor moving forward. They do play at Iowa tonight, I believe. So Ohio State did not really – they didn't have Kyle Young, who's one of their starting forwards, and that's kind of a big piece for them. He's kind of their glue guy, it seems like. And Buckeyes shot 18.5% from three in that game. Not good. Especially when you're on the road, you got to make some threes, and they just couldn't quite get it done. The Wesson brothers were really good in that game, Andre and Caleb. DJ Carton also was doing some good things. He's kind of starting to develop a little more into the player, but yeah, it was just kind of one of those tough road games for Ohio State. Couldn't really get it together. Another thing about that game was Dan Dockich was doing the call, and there was a manager that slipped and fell towards the end of it.
Yeah.
He got on TV and everything, but Dockich spent about maybe 10 minutes talking about this kid. And
what was he saying?
I don't know, man. He was just talking about how he's, like, always checking his phone, and he's going to be so famous and stuff like that. And it was just, like, one of those things where it's, like, oh, all damn. Right, like, we don't need to hear this.
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, sure.
Stockage. I don't really expect a whole lot from him.
Yeah, exactly. He's not the cream of the crop when it comes to the color commentators. All right, that's a – but, yeah, we'll kind of see. Ohio State's kind of hitting a stumble right now. They've lost 4 games pretty recently. And
yeah.
We'll see if they can pull it back together, get healthy and stuff like that. I still hold that they're one of the better teams in the nation when they're at full strength.
Definitely.
Another one, Big 12 matchup, your favorite conference, but number 4 Baylor going into number 22 Texas Tech. Mm-hmm. This was right after that last game we talked about. Baylor wins this one 57-52, kind of a rock fight, if you will, down in Lubbock. So what, did you see this one at all?
I didn't see this one. But I read the stats and read some reports on it. Baylor's got a team who's got great guard play. I think that's, you know, where they excel. I think that's the strength of their team. They really have 4 or 5 guards that they can just rotate in and out, and they're all very solid. They've also got a guy named Flo Thamba.
Oh, yeah.
One of our preseason best names of the, you know, conference. So I think he adds a certain element to that team.
Let's just go with that. Yeah, Baylor's like... And they're very good. They have a lot of really quality wins. They've won against Arizona, who's at home, Villanova on neutral court, against Butler, and now at Texas Tech. Those are 4 really good wins. Texas Tech is a good team. The big win for them now is they go to Kansas tomorrow at 10 a.m. So, or it's, I think it's at 9 or 10 a.m. But yeah, so set your alarms for that. That's going to be a good one. That's number 3 against number 4 in the nation.
Yeah, Baylor's crazy that they moved all the way up to number 4. I mean, they're playing like the number 4 team in the nation, but they haven't been this high in a while.
Yeah, seriously, this is one of the best starts they've had. It's tough putting my finger on exactly what makes them so good. They're really deep. They do a lot of things well. They have, I mean, you mentioned their guard play. They're number 7 on KenPom's defensive efficiency. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
And but yeah, they kind of have the same team as last year. They ran everything back. They got experience and. Maybe with a team, a year with so much topsy-turvy stuff going on at the top, a team with consistency is something that's going to be able to win a lot of games.
Mm-hmm. And Scott Drew is also a really underrated coach for them. He's been a pretty good coach for a couple of years for them. Had some good teams run through Baylor.
There's something about Scott Drew I don't totally trust. I don't know, maybe it's just the way he looks. What do you mean? I don't know. I just see him on the... What have they really done is the thing.
Well, let's see... Are you talking in the NCAA or are you talking in the regular season? Because I'm trying to think back. They've had some really good players come through. Oh, I can't remember their names now that I think. But they've had shooters. What's that guy's name? The white boy shooter? Brady Heslip. Do you remember him for Baylor?
Jeez, man, that's a name. I'm not. Wait, what year is that?
That was like 2 years ago. It wasn't that long ago.
Okay, that sounds a little familiar, yeah.
But yeah, Scott Drew's been coaching there for a while.
He wears like the... I mean, I might be...
Might be reaching.
He might be reaching a little bit on this one, but he wears like really cheap looking suits on the sideline. I'll just look for that tomorrow. I don't know, maybe he'll wear his Sunday best for that game against Kansas, but there's just something little used car salesman. Yeah, we'll see. But
he's got a good team this year.
He does. We'll see.
If he can take them to the NCAA deep into the tournament, you know, I think he's certified. Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
Will he get the pass? Will he get the certification from you if he can go, let's say, Elite Eight with this team?
Yeah, make an Elite Eight with them, yeah. Yeah, okay. You get my pass, which is very, very important, very valuable stuff.
Sure.
Just to get the Josh Eddy nod of approval.
What other coaches have that pass? Does Pitino have that pass?
Oh, of course, dude. Rick Pitino, man, he went all the way, man. They won't tell you that because that title is vacated, but Rick Pitino did win the national championship in 2013. Now, there's a lot of guys on that list. I mean, Coach K, Roy Williams, Jay Wright. You know the bit, the Coach mm-hmm. K. Coach
Tom Izzo?
Oh, yeah. Izzo.
Calipari?
Of course.
Calipari's on it?
All right, we're not going to go through and rank the rest of the
That'll be another episode.
Yeah, we'll go and power rank every coach. Tony Bennett also. Tony Bennett's awesome. I love him.
All right, and Josh, the next game we're going to go over is Memphis-Wichita State. Memphis is ranked at number 21, Wichita State number 23. Memphis continued their descent. They lost to Wichita State. Memphis was actually ranked number 9 just this last week, and they dropped to 21 in the latest rankings. They ended up losing to Wichita State 76-67. Pretty competitive game. What are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, so it was pretty competitive, but the beginning was really what separated the Shockers in this one. They kind of jumped out of a cannon, or shot out of a cannon, sure. I guess, is the correct terminology. But yeah, they were rolling early, and they kind of sputtered out a little bit, and Memphis caught up, and then Wichita State would drive away again. And they never really let Memphis really threaten to take the lead. And I think that showed a lot of maturity. It helps when you're at home, and they had a huge crowd, huge turnout. It was a really electric atmosphere for the Shockers, pun intended. And Greg Marshall's got himself another pretty good squad. This is a guy that's been at Wichita State for a long time, made a Final Four, went undefeated in the regular season, I don't know, what, like 3-4 years ago. They don't have necessarily a star like they did in guys like Fred VanVleet or Ron Baker or even Landry Shamet a couple of years ago, but they have a lot of really good players. I like Eric Stevenson a lot. He's kind of that guard 2-3 combo wing that's just a pure scorer. He's also from Lacey, Washington, so he's kind of a local boy, so shout him out for that. But yeah, he's coming along. He's their leading scorer, but they got a lot of guys that he could throw on the floor, and they're pretty deep.
Yeah, Wichita State is. My biggest thoughts after watching this were just mostly negative on Memphis.
Oh, yeah.
I expected them to be so much better. Obviously, they lost James Wiseman, which is a pretty big blow to take, especially, you know, being the best player in the country, losing him. I don't think they're going to be an Elite Eight team anymore like I did in the preseason. I think their ceiling is probably Sweet 16.
Yeah.
Really depends on how their freshmen develop.
Pretty generous ceiling, but yeah.
It is.
They still have talent, yeah. But yeah, Wichita State, I like them. I think they're a solid team. They're probably going to win that conference.
Definitely.
I mean, Memphis was the only other team that was really their
competition. They'll be a tourney team.
Oh, for sure, yeah. They may even be like a 4 or 5 seed.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Greg Marshall, I was kind of talking about the depth, but he said, he told the commentators before the game that he has to apologize to about 2 or 3 guys every game because he thinks 13 guys on that roster could play. So he has to, it's a total good guy move where he's got to apologize to the walk-ons that don't get to play because they should be able to play, just their team's just so good, which, I mean, we'll see. I think that's just kind of a little bit of a media trick, but.
Interesting.
The other note I have on this game and kind of the games this past week, especially the ESPN ones. So the college football championship's coming up, and every ESPN game, all the commentators are giving their picks. Who's going to win? LSU? Or is it going to be Clemson? Like, who's looking to these guys for, like, who cares? Like, who cares what Dickie V has to say about the game? I mean, Bill Walton did it best. He just said Tigers because they're both Tiger teams. But, I mean, why are this? It's just the most cheap publicity stunt that ESPN can do to try and force that relationship. And it's like Doc Itch is telling me, oh, he thinks Clemson's going to win because they got the experience. Like, I could hear that from anyone.
Yeah, so. And ESPN does really milk it. That game should have happened 2 weeks ago. We don't need to be hearing about college football playoff for a month.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I don't know. So who's your pick? No, I'm joking. All right. So the last game we're going to really get into is the number 24 Arizona going into Oregon last night and kind of choking that game away a little bit. Arizona was really in control. Oregon wins that game in OT. Controversial ending, of course. Mm-hmm. What did you see out of that one?
Peyton Pritchard, you know, really, really impressed me.
Yeah. What's new?
What is new? Peyton Pritchard doing well for that Oregon team. He's the leader. He's a scorer. He's a guy that you can trust in the big moments. He's a guy that can ball handle. He can distribute and get the ball to open shooters. He's probably Oregon's best player at this point in the season.
Yeah, definitely. Another guy that really showed out for Oregon was Will Richardson. He was a guy that actually started a lot last year and then kind of got pushed into that six-man role, and he's kind of been in that role since then. But he doesn't complain at all. He's just a guy that's happy to get on the court. He does a lot of things really well. He defends. He's kind of like that switchy 2-3 guy. And he came up huge. He had 21 points. And pretty much without him, they don't even make it to overtime. They don't win in overtime. So big props to him.
Mm-hmm. Bill Walton was doing that game last night too, right?
He was. Oh, you know. I mean, what doesn't he do?
I was happy he wasn't doing the Huskies game.
Yeah, he would have had a few things to say about that one. But yeah, Bill Walton was doing his normal stuff. I don't know if you saw about the peanut butter. That was the thing is, Nefali Dante is from Mali, and I didn't catch the whole story, but it's something about him coming to the U.S. and he really likes peanut butter, and he was so surprised to find peanut butter everywhere he went, because apparently in Mali they don't. It's a pretty rare commodity there.
Yeah.
So which I guess is a cool time, but Bill Walton had a jar of peanut butter the entire game and was just scooping it with his fingers and eating it the entire game. And the best part about it was...
Nobody wants to see that, Bill.
The best part about it was, I think it was like midway through the second half, they brought in Mario Cristobal, Oregon's head football coach, to just kind of brought him on, talked to him a little bit. But Cristobal actually brought his kid also. And so they only have three headsets. So they gave one to Pash, one to Cristobal, and one to his kid. And so Walton didn't have a headset, yeah, but they gave him an Oregon helmet. So he was just wearing a U of O helmet.
Oh, no.
And so then at the end of it, Bill Walton, who's been scooping peanut butter out of the thing and licking his fingers the whole time.
With the Oregon helmet on.
I mean, he didn't really do it with the helmet on.
He didn't do them simultaneously.
We'll see. The jury's still on that. But so he offers the kid peanut butter, which I'm sure has just got Walton spit all over it.
Oh, God.
And the kid goes for it. And then, like, Cristobal, like a free safety comes over and grabs his hand and doesn't let him eat it.
Boy.
Yeah, that was a good moment right there. But, okay, going back to the game a little bit now. Arizona was pretty much in control this whole game. They were up 6 with about a minute left, and they kind of just choked it away. I will say the three freshmen for Arizona looked really good. Mannion, Josh Green, Zeke Nnaji, all very good. I'm super impressed with Nnaji's development and just his energy on the court. But that's a game they should have won, and it's probably because they're a younger team that they weren't really able to put away a very good Oregon team on the road. That would have been a quality win for Arizona, their biggest win of the season, and they were just came up a little bit short.
Was Dave Pash, was he okay with the whole Bill Walton antic?
You're still stuck on this?
I just can't get past the peanut butter.
Yeah, I mean, like most things with like Pash does, he kind of plays that he's not super okay with it, but I think it's still good for the ratings, and he's always kind of down for whatever Bill Walton has. The other thing was Walton was, at the beginning, had the peanut butter. He was trying to scoop it up and put it on Pash's bald head, which is, I mean.
Pash just has to go along with it. He doesn't really have a choice in the matter because Walton is essentially just bullying Pash.
Yeah, and he's off the rails a little bit.
Yeah, and Pash can't really do anything or else people are going to think that he's actually uncomfortable with it.
Yeah, I think it's a win for Pash, though. He gets a lot of credit, a lot of recognition for that.
True.
I want to talk a little bit about the end of the game. End of regulation was, so it was tied game going down to the final few seconds. Arizona had the ball, could hold for the last shot, and they were able to find Nnaji on the elbow for just a nice jumper. And you see that Pritchard comes over and blocks it on the feed at the beginning, but then as you see the replay, it turns out that Pritchard kind of fouled the shit out of Nnaji and got away with one. So Arizona fans, Sean Miller was definitely not excited about that one. He was very irate, as they were saying. And yeah, so Arizona kind of probably should have gotten a line there and won the game at the end of regulation. So Oregon got away with one a little bit there. I'm pretty impressed with the way Arizona looked in this game, though.
Yeah, I think both teams will be pretty solid in the Pac-12. If UW can beat either one of these teams, it'll be a pretty good resume win for them.
Yeah, definitely. All right, that's about all the games we have. We're going to jump into this new segment, Color Commentator of the Week. There's a lot of really fascinating guys in college basketball. So we want to find out which college basketball head made the biggest splash this week. Some of the options are Bill Walton, Dickie V, Jay Billis, Fran Fraschilla, Rafferty, Seth Greenberg, all those guys. What was yours, Caden?
Well, I took this a little bit differently. College basketball head, I just thought of their physical heads. So there is this new show called The Bald Man on Campus. I don't know if you heard about it. It's an ACC Network special hosted by the bald men, Jay Billis, LaPhonso Ellis, and Seth Greenberg. And it's a 30-minute show before every weekend slate of games. Basically the College Game Day crew, only on ACC Network, so no one will probably be able to watch this game.
Cool.
But it's a show about bald men talking about college basketball. What more could you ask for, really?
I mean, probably nothing, really. Speaking of bald men, Bill Walton's peanut butter antics was definitely a late push for the win of this one. But for me, no one could topple the king, the titan, that is, Dickie V. He's got a great Twitter. Everyone knows. Everyone loves Dickie V. he had quite the pivot on Twitter. He made quite the splash. So this is the tweet. I'll just read it.
Mm-hmm.
This was after Tuesday, like, pretty good games. We kind of talked about some of them, but he said, like many, I've been following the news involving the attacks on al-Assad bases in Iraq by Iran. Off to a pretty good start, right? Being very current. Here's the rest of it. Also, I've been checking hoops news, and four teams should get a tip of the hat. Rutgers, Providence, Maryland, and Boston College. They had W's over Penn State, Marquette, Ohio State, and yes, Virginia, in all caps. So So that's quite the pivot there. That's going from possible World War III brink stuff to college basketball. Yeah. And even some games that aren't super noteworthy. Like
maybe deserving of Providence, two separate...
Over Marquette. Yeah, maybe deserving... two tweets.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a good pivot. Definitely one that would make Trace Tinkle proud. He's one of the better pivoters in the Pac-12.
There you go.
Dickie B's kind of showing him up a little bit on that one. But yeah, Dickie B, man, that was an all-timer. We're going to go into rapid fire, just kind of breaking down the rest of the games. Dickie V did us a little bit of help on that one, so spoiler alert. But Virginia loses to Boston College. The Hoos shot 3 of 16 from 3, and Casey Morcell had a goose egg.
Yep.
Not a good game for the Cavs.
ACC, much worse conference than it was last year. Virginia is not the Titan that it used to be.
No, not at all. Rutgers basketball. Jimmy V will have you liking them, but they went into Penn State and got a win. Pretty much right after I called Penn State one of the better teams on our last podcast. I still like Penn State, but Rutgers has really come along, and they're one of the more formidable teams in the Big Ten.
Yep, and keep an eye on Lamar Stevens for Penn State as he grows as a senior year. Hopefully he can make some noise in the tournament.
Definitely. When Dickie V mentioned, Providence over Marquette on the road. The Friars had an abysmal non-conference. They lost to some really bad teams. The Friars are now 3-0 in the Big East and are on a 5-game winning streak, and they play Butler tonight.
Mm-hmm. Big East again, much improved conference. Marquette, Providence, Seton Hall, all those teams will be tourney teams.
Mm-hmm. Utah State, a team that people were pretty high on, gets killed by Air Force, by 20 points. And now they've lost 3 in a row, kind of in trouble.
Yeah, whatever conference they're in, no.
Yeah, they're Mountain West. Yeah, they're in a little bit of trouble. They lost to San Diego State, but yeah. LSU squeaks one out against Arkansas. Pretty controversial ending. Hog Twitter, Woo Pig Suey Twitter. They were going wild after this one. They hate Will Wade. That's something I learned this past week was Arkansas fans hate Will Wade. So that's something to monitor moving forward.
There you go.
Duke escapes against Georgia Tech. Barely wins that one. Get a win, which would have really hurt their number one seed chances.
Yeah, and top teams are losing like crazy. Duke will lose a couple conference games this year. So nothing too crazy with that.
Mm-hmm. And the final win was Michigan last night. Pulls away in double overtime against Purdue. That was a very good game. It was in Ann Arbor. Travion Williams, huge shout out. He's a big boy. We talk a lot about the chonk boys like Evan Batty, those types of guys. He's up there. He's not quite as big, but he's definitely built. Mm-hmm. And he put up 36 and 20, career high in both those.
Monster game,
and he was just playing his tail off. Yep. Huge shout out to him. Unfortunately, Purdue could not get the win.
Nope. One last thing I wanted to mention, shout out to Auburn, my boys.
Yeah.
Bruce Pearl, right in the ship. Auburn had a big win against Vanderbilt.
Oh, big one.
A close win.
They beat Vanderbilt.
It was a little testy. Auburn team continues to grow. What impresses me is that they can just win in so many different ways. Pretty uncharacteristic shooting night for them. They didn't shoot the ball well from three. But freshman Isaac Okoro scored a career-high 23 points and really carried them to this win. Definitely a name to watch.
Great. All right, I'm just going to rifle through some games to watch this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Tonight, Maryland at Iowa. Maryland has not won a true road game yet this year. Iowa's a team that's been in and out of the top 25. That's a big matchup to watch in the Big Ten. That one's at 4 p.m. Butler going into Providence. Mentioned Providence is red hot right now. Butler, top 10 team. That one's at 6 p.m. Big East matchup. On Saturday, here's the big one. Baylor at Kansas. Number 4 going into number 3. This one's going to be at Fog Allen. 10 a.m., set your alarms. This is maybe the biggest game in college basketball so far.
Mm-hmm. And then another game on Saturday, Marquette versus Seton Hall. Baylor-Kansas might be the biggest, but Marquette-Seton Hall might be the most fun to watch just because we have Marcus Howard and Miles Powell going at it, two of our preseason MVP candidates, so that'll be a fun one to watch.
Very fun guard play on that one. This one is going to hit home to Caden. Clemson going into North Carolina. You guys might be thinking, why are we talking about these two teams?
Well, let me explain. So I got a Seth Davis tweet right here. He says, and I quote, "The football game Monday night may be for the championship, so the college football playoff, but it's still the second most important sporting event Clemson will play this month.
Oh, my gosh.
The Hoops Tigers are in Chapel Hill Saturday, where they have never won. Could this be the year?" Seth Davis asks. Well, Carolina is 59-0 all-time at home against the Clemson Tigers. The longest home winning streak against an opponent in NCAA history. Really a crazy record when you think about it, because Clemson doesn't even play every year at home against Carolina. So 59-0, Carolina has never taken a loss, but if any year Carolina would lose, it would be this one, because I think we're sitting at 8-7 right now, pretty similar to Clemson's record. Both of our teams are just tragic. So it'll be it'll be a scary sight.
Yeah, still no Cole Anthony for North Carolina. They look pretty lost. Final game of the weekend. Well, there's some on Sunday, but none super marquee. Texas Tech going into West Virginia. Those are two top 25 teams that are looking for pretty big bounce back wins. I think both those teams are very quality. I know you've definitely given the Big 12 a share of some crap, but I think the top four teams in Baylor, Kansas, mm-hmm. Texas Tech, and West Virginia are all very solid teams.
Yeah, I probably won't watch that game, though, not going to lie to you.
That one's at 3 p.m., so if you're unlike Caden, there's also a lot of NFL playoffs going on, so that's also very exciting. So on Sunday, maybe less college hoops, maybe more NFL.
Go Hawks. Yeah.
Who's your pick?
Hawks, dude.
All
right. Hawks are going to the bowl.
I'm pulling a little bit for the Tennessee Titans. Not only did they beat the Patriots, but also, yeah, Coach Mike Vrabel that says he would cut off his own dick to win a Super Bowl. I think you got to be rooting for that guy no matter what.
And they beat the Patriots. How can you not root for them throughout the whole playoffs?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know who I'd root for if they played the Hawks. That's how much I'm a Titans bandwagon right now. Let's get it.
All right.
You have anything?
No, I'm good.
All right. Thank you guys for tuning in to another episode. I'm Caden Condor.
I'm Josh Eddy.
And we'll be back next week. It'll be Monday, here Monday, to talk about all the weekend news from college basketball. Thank you guys for listening.